a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 197. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hi, guys. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Hello.
Tired. I'm so tired.
I am also very tired physically and emotionally. I feel like I've gone through a lot these last couple of weeks, just being super busy with work. And just also dealing with some craziness. But I am going to go out of town this weekend to run a half marathon. And I'm trying to find the wherewithal to gather that energy to run 13.1 miles on Sunday.
Oh my gosh.
Even though I have been eating like crazy and drinking beer and really going off of my regimen. And so I don't know how well I'm going to do on Saturday. I know I'll finish. I don't think it'll be a PR, a personal record or anything, but I'm just looking to have fun and enjoy myself. So, I'll let you know the update next week.
Is this the one you're going to do in San Jose?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We should go out afterwards. After you're done with your run and you're not dead.
Well, actually, I have to drive home. We have to drive home on Sunday because the race is Sunday. Because I have to be back to work on Monday. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my God. That's
killing me. You're dying.
That's insane, dude. I can't believe you're going to do that. But hey,
well, yeah. I have the day off Saturday. So if you want to do something, then.
Oh, cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, my plan is to eat at the Spaghetti Factory.
Oh my God, the one that's right down in San Pedro Square.
I don't know where it's at. I've never been there before, but I know there's one in San Jose. So I'm going to find it. Oh, really?
I know where it is. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
There's the one that's like right in downtown San Jose, and then there's like another one. I guess it's like Santa Clara County, but not San Jose itself. It's like either like in Sunnyvale or somewhere.
Oh, got it.
I just know that there's another one nearby.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Take pictures. I want to see what you eat.
Okay.
It's like a discount. It's a knockoff Cheesecake Factory. That's what it is.
I say that it is very comparable to Olive Garden, but to me, the food is better. I'm not a big fan of Olive Garden.
Mm-hmm.
I have only been to Spaghetti Factory once, and I think it was in Hollywood, and this was like my 20s, so I don't recall.
Oh, yeah. I loved that one, and I was so sad that they tore it down because they sold the building, and then the people who bought the building never did anything with it. It was empty for a really long time.
What's in there now?
They finally tore it down, and I think it was just one of those multi-purpose buildings where there's retail on the bottom and then and offices and then apartments and condos on the top.
I see. That's too bad.
Every other Hollywood building.
Yes. So any exciting plans for either of you this weekend?
This weekend? No, nothing exciting except probably drinking.
Wow, that sounds strangely like my weekend. But actually, I'm going to construct or attempt to start to construct my Halloween costume. I was invited to a Halloween party.
Oh,
yes.
Fun.
Yes, and my husband is really always reluctant to like play along. But as he's gotten older, he's gotten better at like being okay with stuff like this.
Oh, cool.
So I got him a skeleton onesie, and he didn't want to try it on. I'm like, come on, just try it on. I want to see if it fits or else I can exchange it.
Yeah.
He put it on and he's like, I love it. He's all like the karate, he's all like the Karate Kid. And I'm like, oh shit. A light bulb just went in my head. So now I'm going to be the shower.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's so funny.
So I just got the shower curtain, the red with white polka dot shower curtain on Amazon. Uh-huh. And so on the weekend, I hope to find a hula hoop and then paint it and do the shower head with the stringy stuff. And then I am going to have to find a way to mount it to my back and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool.
And I said, yes, it's going to be bulky, but for you worth to it. Do a couple's yeah for you to yeah. want to yeah. do a couple's costume is like so worth 120% worth it to me. I'm just so excited because I wanted to pitch him a couple's costume, but in the back of my head I thought he's gonna say no, I don't do that, that's not my style, you know. So maybe this intro to a couple's costume can just kind of get the ball rolling to future couple costume ideas. So
hey,
I'm excited. I mean, I was gonna be a nymph with the horns and you know, the ears, like sort of like Sweet Tooth. But I started looking up stuff and I was gonna start making my horns out of toilet paper rolls, and then he was like, you could be the shower, and I was like, oh hell yeah, I want to be the shower. So, I want to be in the shower, so I'm excited about that.
That's funny.
Make sure that your little stringy things that hang are gold. Then you could have a double costume.
Oh my god!
Incredible,
Kristen. This is a family show. Just kidding. It's not a family show.
Yeah, it's not a family show. We have the explicit rating for a reason.
I love it.
Oh my god. But I was saying, you reminded me though, is that I have my Halloween outfit idea too. Oh, because last weekend I went to a Ren Fair. It was the first time I'd ever been to a Ren Fair.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, I'd never been to one. I always wanted to go to one. Me or too. To like even like... Even like, you know, like the like medievally, like,
yeah,
places. I forgot, medieval times or something like that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go because, I mean, I'm a fantasy girl. I like fantasy. So I was just all like, okay. But I'd never been to one because there wasn't one close by to Los Angeles, and nobody that I knew ever wanted to go to one. They're like,
I love going to those places.
Mm-hmm. I've never been. I want to go.
It was a lot of fun. A lot of walking, but so much fun. And a lot of expensive stuff. But as I was there, I bought like this cute like little like hooded capelet thing. And like one of those skirts with like coins on them.
Ooh.
And, yeah. And then as I was like walking, I was just like, oh, I could dress as Esmeralda.
Yes.
So that's what I've been like slowly ordering the pieces off of like, you know, Amazon and like what it is that I have, and it's coming together. Like, here's the thing about me is that I don't like, I like making my costumes out of clothes that like I already wear. And so everything is all like, it's not like costume quality clothes like that is like cheap and weird and itchy and like plasticky. So the problem with that is that clothes be expensive. So I've already spent like $100 and I'm going to spend like $100
more. Oh my goodness.
Because it's like I bought an under corset or like an underbust corset, a really like cute top and a skirt, but I still need shoes, bracelets, the hairband thingy. And then I was just all like, this is the time to like experiment with my hair a little bit more. So I'm like going to buy like a couple of dollars worth of hair product. So
go to Ross. We'll see.
Yeah. I'll go to Ross. We come full circle. I'll go to Ross and buy a bunch of stuff and see what I can do with my hair to make it poofy like that.
Oh, this is exciting. We're going to dress up for Halloween. I want to see pictures. All right, guys, now it's time for Chisme de la... No, it isn't. Guys, today we're going to introduce a new segment. We're going to have this segment intermittently from here on to the Halloween season of October. So exciting. So this new segment is called Trastorno de Pánico.
I know. If we had a scream soundtrack, that would be the perfect moment to add it.
Non-Spanish speaking listeners, what does that mean?
It's like trauma from panic or just feeling
tormented
by panic. Yes. So basically this segment is to highlight, because this is Hispanic Heritage Month, it's to highlight actual Hispanic movies that are horror movies or dramatic or suspenseful movies. And there, I've been discovering so many movies in our Spanish language and also in native languages. So this is going to be so much fun, I feel. So this segment actually was inspired by a movie that I found on Apple TV, and it is called La Llorona. Now, I know you guys say, okay, I've seen La Llorona. It was like just okay. But that not to be, La Llorona should not be confused with The Curse of La Llorona, which is a whole different movie. So La Llorona is a movie that is directed by Guatemalan horror film director Jairo Bustamante. This movie is just completely amazing. It takes like the back part, like the setup of this movie. Of course, we know that every Latino background, you know, Latin country out there has their own rendition of La Llorona. But this one takes place in Guatemala, and the backdrop is the genocide of the native Mayans that happened between 1982 and 1983. So there's that backdrop where they're trying this man for actually allowing this genocide to happen. And they're in, you know, they're in court. There's a lot of media circus happening and all of this and that. And also, like, ironically, he has native people that are his servants in his home. And that's when the whole thing starts to happen. A lot of people are like, oh, but, you know, like they start to talk about the atrocities that happened during this genocide, and they find him guilty, but he kind of goes into house arrest because he has this attack. I feel that it was a heart attack when he was when they gave up the verdict. But so then he's in this house, but there's all these protesters outside, and they're all chanting and they're day and night and all. And then all because they're starting to hear this woman weeping at night, and he's also experimenting a little bit of Alzheimer's. Anyway, the whole thing unfolds. The amount of imagery that's used in this movie is breathtaking. There's even a lot of symbolism involved. There was a scene where there was a lot of frogs that were kind of like all in the pool area. And I was like, that has to mean something. So I had to pause the movie and I looked it up, and it has to do with a frog being the symbolism of life and death. So I was like, my God, this is brilliant. It's just such an amazing movie. The acting, the script, the effects, the actors, they were all just amazing. And my favorite part was that they were speaking native language, which is it's spelled K-A-Q-C-H-I-K-E-L. I don't know how to pronounce that. I assume it's K'iche',
K'iche'.
Thank you. I knew you were going to help me out. Thank you so much. But anyways, check that out. It's actually, you can see that on Shudder or on Apple TV. So if you watch it, please let me know what you think, because I completely fell in love with it. It's not only in Spanish, it's also in that other language. What is it called again, Jen?
K'iche'.
Thank you. But yeah, it's so freaking awesome. I can't wait to hear from you guys, because it was just so amazing. I just have other movies that I can't wait to share with you guys that I've been watching, and I've been writing notes on it, and I just can't wait to expand more on this segment. And again, the movie's called La Llorona. Again, do not confuse it with The Curse of La Llorona. This is La Llorona. And if you want to put Guatemala there in the search bar, so you can find it. We've already posted the trailer on our Facebook page, so check it out.
Yeah, it's I've actually seen this movie, and it was actually Javi was the one who recommended it to me, because, you know, he's like a big, I believe if you have Shudder, it's available on Shudder, which I think is part of like the AMC Plus or AMC, it's like AMC's horror like movie app. So you can watch it on there, and it is a really great and like powerful and impacting movie, because I watched it because I wanted, there's so much that happened in that era And it was kind of loosely based off of the ex-president who was tried for the
genocidio.
Yeah,
genocide.
Yeah, the genocide of Mayan people. And I don't know, it's something my parents came to the U.S. around that time, and they don't like talking about it, or they don't like talking about that era because it would have affected them. But I have my suspicions that, because this also coincided with the Guatemalan Civil War and how that spanned in for a very long time. But it is, if you know people who came during the 80s and they're from Guatemala, it is very highly likely that they came because of that reason.
All right, guys, now it's time for On My Radar. What's on your radar, Kristen?
So On My Radar this week actually goes right along with your spooky theme. And it is, I think, a series I talked about in the past, but this is the second iteration of it. And it is called Stuff of Nightmares. But this time, instead of it being an ongoing story of 5 issues, it is an anthology series. So each individual issue is a standalone story, and it's a horror story. And it is done in, it's written by R.L. Stine. So if you don't know who R.L. Stine is, then you probably were born in a closet.
In a bubble?
But yes, yeah, so R.L. Stine is the creator and writer of Goosebumps. And so I think even me, Goosebumps was way after my time, but even I read a lot of the Goosebumps books just because my brother had them. Also, the kids I would babysit when I was in college had them, and they were really easy reads, fast reads, and they were fun and very campy. And this series is R.L. Stine's series for adults. So it is still campy, which I love, but does not hold back on the horror, the gore, the just all out adult stuff when it comes to horror. So I really enjoyed it. This particular issue that was out this week was Stuff of Nightmares, Red Murder #1. But like I said, it's not an ongoing, it's a anthology series. So each one is a one shot. And this particular issue is about a comic creator who's been out of the spotlight for decades. And he really is like trying to trying to get his limelight back, but like trying to deal with the fact that he isn't in the limelight, I guess. There is a story that he wrote about an axe murderer. And in this particular issue, a real axe murderer who is cosplaying as the character that he wrote starts to kill people. So there is, just like most Goosebump books, there's a twist. There was always a twist in Goosebumps, and there's a twist in this book as well. But if you love horror and you were a big fan of R.L. Stine as a kid, this is your opportunity to read an adult geared R.L. Stine book called Stuff of Nightmares, Red Murder.
Well, that sounds super interesting, because like you said, we all kind of grew up watching R.L. Stine Goosebumps, so I'd really love to read some adult content by that creator. That sounds really amazing. And are they going to use different artists for all different one-shots?
I believe, actually, I don't know. The artist for this particular one is Adam Gorham. And I don't know if it's going to be other artists or not. The cool thing is that there are multiple artists doing covers. So one of my favorite artists did a really cool one, Frances, Frances, Francesco Francavilla, did a really cool one with his style and his coloring that I loved. So you can find covers by the interior artist, A.L. Kaplan, Francavilla, and I think that might, Miguel Mercado. Is also, and he had the, honor of doing the, homage variant. So there's an homage variant, that looks like the cover of a Goosebumps book. That one's really cool. I don't think we got that one in, but, I really, liked the story, and I liked seeing all the different colors. So again, if that's your thing, or you were an R.L. Stine fan when you were a kid, I highly recommend it.
All right, guys, now it's la hora de la cervecita. What are we drinking today, girls?
All righty. So today we are drinking a beer by Smog City Brewing Company called Mango Pango. It's an ale exploding with fruit with natural flavors. Mango, peach, and I think that's it. Just mango and peach. And it says that Mango Pango is the ultimate party in a can. Super fruity, a little tart, and a whole lot of fun. This fruity ale is delightfully refreshing and the perfect go-to. With loads of mango and peach juiciness, Mango Pango turns any time into party time. Nice.
Ooh, party time. Excellent. I'm excited because we haven't tried anything from Smog City Brewing in a while. And it feels like it's going to be like a summer drink. And I actually read something on Beer Advocate stating about it being kind of a summery inspired drink. And because I know we're already in fall, but it's still a little bit warm. So I thought we could give this one a try.
Nice.
So I'm excited. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're located in Torrance, and I can't wait to try this one. That's actually one of the first breweries I went to where they had my most favorite was called The Nothing. It's called The Nothing. I think they brew it every fall. So I can't wait to go get that on tap. All right, guys, nice. Tell me what you think.
All right, let me open mine.
Ooh, the smell is absolutely amazing.
I smell peach right away.
Right off the bat, you can smell the peach. Okay, that is interesting. So for me, I'm having mixed emotions about this.
All right. As soon as I read the description and the word tart entered into the description, I was like, oh no, I'm going to hate it. And while I don't hate it, I honestly don't love it either.
Wow.
Right now I took one drink, and the lingering of the flavors is very strong on my tongue. Right now, after having swallowed the beer, mm-hmm. I can taste the peach and the mango very strongly on my tongue. And that is the most enjoyable part of it, because right off the bat, the tartness that was from the beginning was too much. I didn't like it.
Yeah. What about you, Jen? What do you think?
I don't hate it. But it's,
I'm trying to drink more to kind of see if it evolves. I'm telling you,
like I know it says mango, but I keep thinking sour watermelon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It doesn't taste like mangoes to me.
I tasted the peaches before I tasted anything.
The peach, yeah. Mm-hmm. The peach is very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is very strong. But overall, like all encompassing, I'm thinking like sour watermelon candy.
Oh.
Yes.
And you know, I am a big fan of sour candy. And now I'm perplexed because why do I not like sour beer?
Yes. That is true, because I love lemons and limes and, you know, grapefruits and everything. And uh-huh. I'm just, Yeah, I don't like sours at all. For me, it feels like, okay, there's absolutely no carbonation. So that's interesting. Secondly, it is very strong with the peach, but there's no sweetness to it. It's completely tart. And it, because there's no carbonation, it almost feels like I'm drinking water with, like, when you put like flavor in it, like maybe like drops of flavor in it, and you mix it up, and that's what, and it's cold, and that's what it tastes like to me. It doesn't, it doesn't taste like beer to me.
So for me, I do feel the carbonation, but it is kind of like a sour La Croix, because I can taste the flavors of mango and peach, but it's like how the guys at the shop would always say that it was the essence of fruits. It was like not, it's not the flavor. It's just like the essence that's there. And so it's very, it, while the peach is stronger than the mango, all over is faint. Like all the flavoring to me is faint. So, which is fine. Yes. I always get frustrated with people when they're like, it says that it's fruity. I'm like, that's not when you are describing alcohol, beer and wine, yes, things are fruity, but they're not, they don't taste like fruit. I don't know how to be more clear or specific. It's like it's not sweet. When you say something tastes fruity, doesn't mean that it's sweet. And a lot of people expect that when they drink beer that says it's fruity. So I wasn't expecting it to be sweet, but I didn't want it to be sour. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, you're right on that point. It's not fully sour like others. I'm going to drink it, and it's a 4.3, but it definitely feels like the essence of beer. And it's kind of like more leaning towards like a La Croix. With almost no carbonation for me. That's all I got to say about that.
All right. So are we ready to rate it then?
Yes, I'm ready to move on from this segment.
So just as a reminder to everybody, we have a rating scale, which is a 5-point scale, where 1 is very unsatisfied, 2 is just regular unsatisfied, 3 is neutral, 4 is satisfied, and 5 is very satisfied. So I'll go ahead and start. This is Kristen, and I'm gonna say, okay, the mad face always gets me. Like, I didn't like it, but I'm not mad about it, so I'm just regular unsatisfied, and that is a 2 out of 5.
This is Sarah, and I'm going to also say I'm unsatisfied.
This is Jen. I'm going to give it a 3.
Ah, okay.
Because I think this would make a good mangoneada.
Oh,
or
yes.
Or a good michelada. Or just anything that will, like,
give it flavor.
Yeah. With tajin, I think, out of this world. But yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.
All right.
Like I said, I didn't hate it, but it's also it could have, I don't know. I was expecting it to be more with the way that it looks. With the way that it looks.
Oh, like, yeah. Really, we didn't, like, we were so unsatisfied. We didn't even say anything about the can art. It does look very satisfying for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just wanted it to be more. I think if you had just poured this to me, I would have been like, ooh, tart. But with everything, I don't know. Yeah. I wanted it to be more. But as
same.
Is, a 3.
Same. Yeah.
The more I drink it, the less tart it becomes, and the more I can stand it.
I mean, isn't that the case with all alcohol?
Yes. The first drink was just very shocking. But it's not as bad now that I've been drinking it over time. But I would never pick this. I would drink it for free, but I would never pick it and buy it.
Yes, that should be a rating. I will drink it for free, but I'd never buy it.
Write it down.
It's like, what would that be? That'd be like what? Like in between 0 and 1?
Yeah.
Or kinder.
All right, guys, now it's time for our book review. And what are we reviewing today, girls?
Today we're reviewing a very cool, small, little... I don't know what you would call this. Is it like a single issue? Is it like a... It's not a zine, but it is a book that Sarah picked up. Was it at the Latino Comics Arts... Festival?
Yes, that's correct. Latinx Comics Arts Festival. Yes, in Modesto.
LCAF. That's how I remember LCAF. It now.
But I have to say, I have met this artist slash writer before. It was one of the very first times I did the mini interviews in Artist Alley at San Diego Comic Con, and she was my very first interview.
Oh,
and that
really?
Was years ago. Yeah. I remember because I added her immediately to Instagram, and her name always stuck with me because it's such a cool name. It's Chica Artista Illustration. And then she does a lot of watercolor. She's like a really amazing artist. So when I saw her at Modesto, I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen you forever. And, you know, we chatted about what happened, you know, COVID and family and all this stuff, and then I'm like, you know what, I'd love to pick up one of your books so that we could share it on our podcast, and here we are today.
Oh, well, that's cool. Well, yes, so this book and this creator that Sarah's talking about is Abigail Pina Rocha Carlisle. So long name. She goes by Abby Rocha on the front of the book. And she's a Chicana illustrator based in the Bay Area of California, so up there by where Jen is. She creates art, comics, illustrations, and murals about Latino culture as well as the world around her. As a failing goth in recovery, she is also an advocate of the death-positive community and explores the intersection between death and Mexican culture. You can find out more information about Abby at abbyrocha.com. That's ABBYROCHA.com. So this book is called Mercy. And it is, just like Sarah said, published by her own publishing company, Chica Artista Comics. And it says Volume 1. Sarah, since you actually saw her at the table, were there other volumes that you can remember or that you know about?
Oh, you know, this was from last year, and I went to her table towards the end, so it was like one of her few remaining books. I don't know if she had more or additional volumes or anything like that. I mean, I wish I would have asked her, but I didn't. I failed you.
Well, I actually could have gone to abbyrocha.com, and so I guess I have also failed because I just saw the volume one right now. I thought it was just a one and done, but I just saw the volume one and was like, oh, I wonder if there are more, because the reality is that while this could be a story with an ending, I really feel like it was left open-ended with more to be said. I was just wondering on that, but, the basic story, is following Abby telling us, the reader, about how when she was a little girl, she grew up listening to the stories that her, family, her parents told her about how they came to the United States. She remembers hearing as a little girl, the story of their crossing the U.S.-Mexican border and braving that particular trip through the desert and mountains. And it's really interesting because, of course, she heard this story as a little girl. And as we move further into the story itself, we learn that her memory may not be actually what happened. And so we find out a little bit more about, not a lot, but a little bit more about her mother and father's journey here to the United States, and just how her memory of being told that story and what the reality is kind of are in conflict. So I really, even though it was short, I really enjoyed this story. I really enjoyed the art. The one critique that I do have is that the pages where the words were in white against black background, I had a very hard time reading. So I, you know what I had to do? I had to take a picture of it with my phone and make it bigger. Because I couldn't read the words.
Yes. Yes.
I really enjoy that she...
Innovate. Overcome.
I really enjoy that this is a story from... it's a biographical story that she's heard, and that it's just her family's history. I have enjoyed all of the stories that we've read specifically about the immigration to the United States. I'm going to look as soon as we're done here to see, or I'm going to look as soon as one of you start talking, to see if there are any further, because part of the story that we're being told in this volume one is how she called her mom as research for doing this particular comic. So she had to call her mom and just kind of like, you know, confirm some things. And so to me, I'm wondering, okay, she's doing research. She's doing this. There has to be way more of this story to be told. And so I'm going to check to see if there is, if there's a volume 2, 3, 4, and 5 that we can buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. This story basically reminds me of like, there are three versions of something. It's like your version, their version, and the truth.
And the truth. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things, I mean, I really relate to this story because there's a lot of things that I feel like I remember a certain way as a child, and then talking about them as an adult with your aunts, uncles, dad, or mom or whatnot, they're different when they tell you as an adult because they don't omit the bad parts.
Right.
And
yeah.
So this is one of those instances where I'm not shocked that it happened the way it happened, but she kind of feels a little bit bad because she remembers a different way, but I don't think it was her remembering in a different way. I think it was told to her in a different way, and that's what kind of stuck. And so without her having called her mom to research what had happened, she wouldn't have known the actual, like, really big events that were completely different. I mean, one of the things was she felt that she was created in Mexico and mm-hmm. then crossed the border as her mom was pregnant with her. And that actually was not true. She wasn't even in the picture because her older brother was still an infant when they were crossing the border. So that kind of took 3 years from the equation. But yeah. You know what? It feels so familiar because there are certain things that you want to talk to your parents about or your aunts and uncles and are afraid to ask because it might not be how you remembered it or how it was told to you. And it might be more traumatizing than what the reality is, than what they have told us before. I mean, and, you know, I know as far as Mexican elders, they like to tell stories and they say it in such a way that it almost seems like, what is that? The term where it's like magical realism. So it sort of takes on this kind of mythical kind of entity of its own within the story of your history. And so then you're like almost afraid to break the magic. And so I feel like this is going to be something more than the volume one, as you said. So, and then I feel like at the end of the page, she actually takes a moment to say, God, I wish I hadn't made my mom relive that trauma. Mm-hmm. And that was like, wow, you know, that's another thing you have to consider when asking your family about your family's past. What about you, Jen? What do you think?
It... This book is really short.
Yes.
It's like 4 pages at best, front and back. If we're not cutting in front and back, then it's 4 pages. 2 pages folded together to make like a little 4-page comic, including the title and the back. But it made me feel a lot of things. I don't know. I liked it. I think like aesthetically, I did like it a lot. I like the cover. I like the fact that she's telling her story, her family story. But like I think earlier, and I think this ties in well with you bringing up that La Llorona movie too. It brings up a lot of feelings and emotions for me as well. Because I think there's something that is unsaid in Latino culture, and I think especially in, and this might not be true for like all Latinos, and you know, like Latin identity is so big and wide, and it covers a lot of different nationalities and like and even like races and ethnicities, because there is no Latino identity, yep. I think, that is all in unifying. But one thing that I have seen in Korean, especially when in families and situations like this, that I have seen that I think comes from a history of being colonized, is that we like to lie. Like as a family, to each other, to ourselves, we love to lie. And we pass it off as stories. So that when the truth comes out, because the truth always hurts more than what could be. So what's a little white lie to a child to tell her? Like, oh, maybe like you were part of here, but no, that you were actually born here. What's a little white lie to say, oh, this man let us go free because he was kind, when in reality, it was just a singular lapse. Either from his point of view, probably a lapse of judgment, but from their point of view, a singular act of mercy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then what happened to all the other people that were rounded up?
Mm-hmm.
It made me feel a lot of things. And a lot of them, like, you know, good and bad. So I think overall, I did enjoy this, but it's not something that I would want to read again. I think once is enough, simply because I know my own family story. Mm-hmm. And I know kind of the depths that we would go to and that we would do. One, to realize hope, but also to keep the lie going. You get me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most absolutely, definitely. Like, I mean, I know some of the part of the story of my mom immigrating to the U.S. And then there are certain other things, because my mom has passed. I can't ask her about that. She would volunteer as truth now as an older person.
If she even would. Because yeah, some of exactly. them will die before they ever say anything.
Yes, they're going to take it to the grave.
They'll take Literally. It to the fucking grave.
Yeah. Well, this reminded me of an event where I was talking to a family member, and I have a certain aspect of a person that was close with my mom. It was very positive. And then this family member talked to me and told me, that's not how it was. Let me tell you the truth. And after that, I feel so conflicted with my relationship with this other person, because I'm just like, if they treated my mom like that, why do I want them in my lives? You know, but they never showed me that part to me. So, I mean, it's just, it's so Mexican.
What is the truth? What is the truth? And the people that we keep in our lives because of their family, because we grew up with them, because we knew them, because they did this. And so now we have to do that. And like the intricacies, it's such a small book, but I think
it makes you feel so much.
Yeah, it makes you feel so much. And I think unless also like you are part of the culture, you don't realize all the underlying like implications that are in the book as well. Because I right here in just like her saying that she thought that she was in the picture as well, is the like I want to the Latin, like the a specific like kind of Chicano or just like outsider, kind of a Latino but not really a Latino. You get me?
Yeah.
The like you want to be connected, you want to be tied, you want to be originated in there, but the truth of the matter is that you were born here in the United States. And most of your history is tied to the United States instead of this, the mother country.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that duality, but there's also the journey and how the journey, even when it was earlier back in the day, still wasn't safe. It was never safe, and it still isn't safe. And there is so much that's left untold. Yeah. And the people who make it, the people who never make it, and the people who made it but then got caught and sent back. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many intricacies that could be delved on into this book. And she kind of touches a little bit in the back of, like, since 1998, at least 7,805 human beings have lost their lives crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. More than 3,527 people remain disappeared. At least 4% have been homicides. And the statistics come from the Colibri Center for Human Rights. So there's so much in just what is basically a 4-page booklet.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly well done. So kudos to Abby Rocha. Like, you did an amazing job. And you made me feel a lot of things. So good job.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't realize it was so small until I started reading it, but it told such a vast story mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it touched all three of us in any type of way. And it just unlocked some conversations that I wish I could have had. It unlocked conversations that I've had and memories of stories that I've been told. So what about you, Kristen? Do you want to say anything else, or are we ready to rate it?
Oh, I did just want to mention that I went to the website and there is no mention of this book at all on her website, period.
Fix that, Abby.
I don't know. Maybe she sold out of it.
Yes,
I think she might have sold out of it.
I was going to say, I don't know if she sold out of it and so she took it down, or if she just decided that there wasn't going to be any more volumes and so she took it down. I don't know. But I definitely think there's a lot more story that can be told. But just as Jen says in her review, you know, once was enough. I think maybe Abby felt that once was enough for her bringing this up with her mom and making her mother relive the trauma. I mean, at the end of the day, it was idealized and romanticized in Abby's mind when she remembered the story the way that either was told to her or she remembered it incorrectly. Well, you know, she probably will never know. But to actually hear the truth and have to digest that and, you know, wrap your mind around that and then know that you have now kind of been the reason why your mom is going through, like, remembering that trauma again, I'm sure that's very, very difficult. So it could just be that she just wanted to just do one volume and that's it, that was enough. So I guess we might not ever know unless we see her again.
Pick her out of drinks. Abby, you want to go out to drinks and trauma dump on each other?
Yes.
But Sarah, I know it was last year, over a year ago. Do you remember how she presented the book to you, or what made you purchase this book out of all of the things she had?
Well, to be completely honest, I first started it. I interviewed her, like I said, at San Diego Comic-Con years ago, and I was watching her do a watercolor painting while she was at her table. So that caught my eye because she was painting a monarch butterfly, I believe. And so a lot of her artwork has these butterflies in her artwork. Mm-hmm. So as I was following her and I saw her Instagram posts, there were some that she was actually actively painting on her Instagram posts. And that really that drew me to her because they were really vivid in color. They were amazing details and everything. Like, I couldn't believe she was doing this with watercolor. Like, it just blew my mind. And then seeing her again at her table in Modesto, and I was like, oh, I instantly recognized her. I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen you since, you know, she recognized me because I guess I was the only person who interviewed her. So, you know, she remembered me as well. So we started talking and I'm like, God, it's so good to see you. I haven't, you know, seen you in a while. And I think you posted less. And she goes, oh, yes, you know, she's telling me about, you know, her family. And then there was the COVID and all that stuff. And I said, you know what? I really love this cover because obviously it's a monarch butterfly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what drew me to her artwork was these vivid butterflies. So that's why I picked up this book. And I think it was one of the only ones that had three copies, at least three copies. Okay. So what I really wanted was to get one copy to each of us because we record remotely so that we can review her work. I didn't really ask her about the comic or the book itself, except that I was just like really drawn to the butterfly in the front of it. I think we briefly touched on what it was about, but I honestly can't remember the conversation, but I know that I was drawn to the butterfly.
Got it.
And because that's what really draws me to her work is the butterflies that she does, because they're so intricate and they're watercolor and they're so, what is it called? So like colorful. So, I remember one artwork she has. It's a skull and there's monarch butterflies like landing on it. Anyway, she's just really just such a gifted artist, and that's what drew me to this book in particular, because there was enough copies for all of us, and I love the cover.
Well, I definitely do recommend it. All of you listening, go to abbyrocha.com to see her illustrations. And I see probably the print that you're talking about with the butterflies around the skull's head. And then there's multiple hands reaching underneath the soil up to the butterflies and the skulls. But you can really see her advocacy of death positive community in her art, and she's very, very talented. I'm a big fan of watercolor artists, and it's just very, very striking the illustrations that I'm seeing on her website. So definitely recommend that you go and check it out.
Yes, and you could buy stickers, books, and prints off her website. And also you could follow her works on Instagram. And that's Chica, C-H-I-C-A, _ artista, A-R-T-I-S-T-A, _ illustration on Instagram. So check that out. I think we're ready to rate the book. Go ahead and start it off, Kristen.
Okay, so I am going to give this book Tres Conchas and a Cup of Champurrado. It's fall. We're starting to get into hot drink weather. And that sounds only in the morning, though, here. Because by
high season.
But because here in Southern California, by 11 a.m., it's already hot again. So I wear my sweaters and my hoodies for like 2 hours in the morning. And then I have to get back to my tank tops. But it is changing. It is coming. I'm very excited. So three conchas and a cup of champurrado. And just as a reminder, our rating system is on a scale of 1 to 3 conchas, with 3 being the best rating. So if there's anything in addition, that just means it's off the charts. So what about you guys?
Well, this is Sarah, and I'm going to also give it tres conchas and a cup of champurrado because I really loved it. It just unlocked a lot of memories for me and a lot of things that I have questions about as well. So I think it was really thought-provoking, and the art was amazing. What about you, Jen?
I'm going to give it three conchas and, you know what, the entire panaderia, campo champurrado, arroz con leche, all the things. it was really good. I really love the cover for it. I think it's very evocative, especially because, I mean, the journey of the monarch butterflies is so, like, it's from all the way, I think, South America?
Oh,
because they pass through Central America for sure, or like and then like up past the U.S. Mexico border all the way up into Canada.
Oh my God, I did not know that, and that gives a whole different meaning to the cover of this book, and it's
yes,
with its relation to the story that is within. That's amazing. Yeah. I learned something new today.
Yeah, it's is it the monarch? It's like, I think around, it's going to start soon in October, November. And I might be wrong. It might not be South America. It might just be from Mexico. Mm-hmm. From Mexico into all the way up to Canada. But yeah, it's like, it's there. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. That it's a giant tourist attraction is the monarch butterfly. Mm-hmm. When they like all like come together into hanging together into those huge like bundles.
Yes.
Like people go and see them. There's no well-known spots where they go to. So it's,
I've never heard of any of this. I have also been living in a closet.
It's a very beautiful, but it's funny how, I mean, their migration is beautiful. It's seen as natural. It is mm-hmm. natural. And mm-hmm. how is that any different from human migration?
Right.
But I digress. I think she did a very wonderful job of choosing the monarch butterfly as the title for it. So just symbolism, A1, story, yep. A1, feelings. I mean, they're in the F, but also A1. So, you know, it's good.
It's so funny you mentioned the monarch butterfly journey, because I just saw a movie on Amazon Prime called A Million Miles Away about the first Latino to go off into space. And
oh, yeah.
One of the things that his father as a migrant worker would say, it was to speak about the journey about the monarch butterfly. So that's why it was really fresh in my mind. So when you caught that, I was like, oh shit, she's right. It's really just kind of a beautiful, amazing, just serendipitous and symbolism and art. And it just does so much. And so such a small, it's 4 pages and it's just amazing. It's crazy.
Yeah. That's good. We appreciate it. We appreciate you, Abby.
Yes, I'm going to change my rating to the Hope on Arderia, like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, just that extra kind of touch that you unlocked for me just sends it for me to the Hope on Arderia.
Glad I could provide. Media literacy, learn it.
All right, guys, now it's time for En la Libreria. What do you have for us today, Jen?
Time to take away our thoughts from our feelings and instead our thoughts into our thoughts. THOTS. Anyways, what I have for you is I Want That Twink Obliterated, an anthology of queer science fiction fantasy. I'm like pretty sure I haven't recommended this one before. I might have done it to the ladies, but
yeah,
if this is a repeat, my bad, but I mean, it bears.
It's cool.
Yeah, it bears repeating. So this is a science fiction, fantasy, and horror inspired by classic pulp magazine starring LGBTQIA+ heroes and villains. So let me read the synopsis, or like the story that they have here on the campaign. I Want That Twink Obliterated will be stuffed with thrilling short stories starring non-traditionally masculine heroes and villains. We're taking the classic tropes of pulp science fiction, fantasy, and horror and recasting them through a radical queer lens. Think femboy starship captains. Think trans berserkers fueled by queer rage. Think literal demon twinks. The stellar pulp stylist Stefan Andrade has created the cover, evoking some of a favorite science fiction fantasy aesthetics of the 60s and 70s, peppering it with queer references and iconography. Can you spot them all? The brilliant, cheeky Oliver Darkshire is also creating one of his beloved one-page RPGs for the anthology. Seize your destiny and obliterate that twink yourself. Note, this RPG will be exclusive to the Kickstarter edition of I Want That Twink Obliterated and will not be featured in the standard ebook or any reprints. No twinks will be harmed in the creation of this anthology. Unless they really, really want to. No. They didn't add that. I just added that.
That's cool.
So, the anthology will feature approximately 16 stories, depending on length. It will come from their anchor authors, with the rest sourced through open submissions. Contributors will be paid 8 cents a word, and the full submission guidelines is posted on the Kickstarter page. Submissions are open. The submission portal will accept stories from 11:59 GMT on will accept stories until 11:59 GMT on Sunday, 17th of December. The editors are particularly keen to see submissions from trans, non-binary, or intersex writers, women, arrow or ace writers, disabled writers, neurodiverse writers, Black, South Asian, or East Asian writers, or other writers of color. And then they have a list of all of the current writers that they have who are part of like the Anchor launch, and they have a list of the rewards that they are is that a jock strap? Yeah.
Okay.
I was just scrolling. This is great. I love this. Anyways, it is being done by Bona Books, who have backed 11 Kickstarters, but this is the first Kickstarter that they have created, and they're based in London. They are a small press specializing in fantasy, science fiction, and horror, founded in London by Trip Gailey, C.L. McCartney, and Robert Berg. In Polari, underground queer slang, Bona means good, and that's their mission. Good queer books. So they are available. I think they have an actual shop. Either way, they are a publishing company. So you can always support them without expecting a reward. You just want to support. But the base pledge starts at £10, which is about $13. And it's the ebook only. Delivered DRM free to you. And then about £15 or $19, you get the digital plus. So it's the ebook plus a copy of Oliver Darkshire's one-page RPG. And then at about £20 or $25, you get the first edition paperback plus the ebook. And then at £30, which is about $37, you get a signed and personalized version of the book as well. And then it keeps adding up on there. There's different there's some that are the same price. They're just different. Like, you can need to choose a different print or a different... Is there a different cover? No. There's no different cover. You can choose a print. You can get the Obliterate Me Daddy Jockstrap. I have to put that out there. It's haunting me.
Oh my god!
It's there. It's £75 or about $92. It says "obliterate me." It's a jockstrap. The tier is called "obliterate me, daddy." Wow!
I had a penis.
The good old days
when you had a penis.
No, just the good we old have like
technology on our side now. You don't need okay,
this is true. This is true.
There is harnesses and everything.
Yes.
Ooh.
Anyways, so they've actually already hit their goal, which is why it wasn't the first thing that I brought up. This thing is happening. They had a goal of $9,102. They are at $14,820 with 408 backers, and as of recording, 14 days to go. This sounds really fun, and I just love, like, this is everything that I've wanted from my science fiction, like, reads and everything. Like, this is it. Like, I've already backed this. There's, like, there's nothing stopping me except maybe money. And even then, I will scrounge the money to buy this thing. I'm not going to get this jockstrap because of reasons. But I'm probably getting one of these prints or something. It's a really cool. It's really, like, old school sci-fi pulpy cover. I want that twink obliterated on Kickstarter. Check it out. Laugh with me and order the book.
All right, guys, it's now time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
So today I have for the listeners also a Kickstarter, but this one is supporting a very interesting cause. Grant Morrison and Brian Michael Bendis are coming together to create and support and have a comic anthology made to support the workers who were impacted or are going to be impacted by the Writers Guild of America strike. So the comic is called General Strike, Cal Exit, and Other Tales of Fighting the Good Fight. And it's going to be released by Black Mask Studios in association with the Writers Guild of America. The project is currently being crowdfunded on Kickstarter, and it had a very, very small goal of $2,800, which they've already raised. They are over $5,000. The anthology will be a 48-page one-shot described as focused on the struggle of economic equality and will be released with a variety of variant covers. The Kickstarter says that its profits will go to the Entertainment Community Fund, which is a charity that supports striking writers, actors, and crew workers. And so when you go to the Kickstarter, you can see that it has, in fact, already reached its goal. It is now at $6,874 with 161 backers and 22 days to go.
That sounds really amazing because didn't they just reach an agreement?
They did. And it did say it's a tentative agreement in this article.
Oh,
okay. So, yeah.
No, but it's cool that they're putting their name out there to try to raise funds to help the strikers because, I mean, they've been out there for a long time now. And so I think this is a really, really amazing cause. All right, guys, now it's time for saludos. And we are saludando today. I met this group of people. I'm not sure who or if there's one or two creators. They're called Stitches and Orbs. You can find their work on Instagram. It's Stitches and A-N-D Orbs, O-R-B-S. And it's all one word on Instagram. Basically, they have a lot of amazing stuff. They basically make custom round ornaments for Christmas, and they hand paint them. It could be anything from like DC, Marvel, to Hogwarts, to Star Wars, to just about anything. They did one with the Infinity Gauntlet that I showed Kristen, and they also have custom hand towels stitched, anything geeky, Star Wars, Harry Potter, all sorts of amazing stuff, and they're local to the area. And if you want to get a custom order done, you should submit it before October 15th because there has to be enough time for them to make it because they're handmade and delivered to you. So I suggest you go on Instagram and check out Stitches and Orbs. And again, the deadline is October 15th to get any handmade, hand-painted ornaments that you'd like to see on your tree this Christmas season. They have a lot of amazing stuff on their Instagram, so I suggest you check them out. I met them at Long Beach Comics Expo, and they had such amazing stuff. I didn't have the budget to buy the stuff, but I'm definitely looking into getting some custom stuff done for our tree this year, but I'm super excited to share them with you. Again, they're a small business. So during this Christmas season, I really, really hope you do look into buying local and buying small businesses because that really helps out for people that are trying to make a living out of their passion and small business. So again, check out Stitches and Orbs.
And if you miss them at Long Beach Comic Con, they are going to also be at LA Comic Con December 2nd and 3rd.
All right, guys, that brings us to the end of this episode. Where can they find us?
You can find us at comadrescomics.com, where you can find information on our social media. We also have a YouTube channel where you can actually watch us interview amazing creators and listen to them talk about their projects and just overall be entertained and sometimes learn things. So that is Comadrescy Comics on YouTube.
You could also find us at Kale. We're going to be, we are separating ourselves. So I am going to be at Kale. That's C-A-L-E. It's Comic Art and Literacy Expo. It's October 21st, Saturday. It's only one day and it's from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. So check that out. We will be sharing that location on our Instagram and Facebook. But again, if you want to find me, Sarah, I'm going to be there with some books for sale and a lot of free swag. And I'm thinking of bringing candy as well. So if you have a sweet tooth or if you like that Mexican hot candy, you should come on over and hang out with me. Again, that's Kale, C-A-L-E, 2023, the Comic Art and Literacy Expo. Where else can they find us, Kristen?
So on October 21st, I myself will be at ValorCon. And for those of you who are further east, in, I believe it's Riverside County, it's ValorCon mini comic convention. And it is going to be held at last time that it was held, it was in a high school, what do you call it, like a cafeteria section. And I believe that, I'm just trying to, it says details, but there's no, it's in, oh, did I mention it's in Paris? P-E-R-R-I-S, so Paris, California, not Paris, France. France.
Every single time you say it, I'm like, Paris?
So ValorCon is a comic book and science fiction fantasy show. There's going to be lots of comics, books, and collectibles to sell. I will be there representing Kumasi Comics. Last time they had amazing panels. I was on one of the panels that was really cool. I really enjoyed participating. I enjoyed the show, and amazingly enough, I'm very excited because it's going to, they're going to give us free food, and I know Sarah gets free food at hers too, so nothing makes us happier than free food.
Oh yes. Yes, absolutely. Honestly. You had us at free food. And that location is, there's going to be Saturday the 13th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's at 972 West Morgan Street, Paris, California, 92571. Admission is free and so is parking.
It's actually the 21st, so I don't know if you have the right information.
Oh, I am so sorry. I have the wrong information. Please disregard what I just said. I just Googled it and I got the wrong information. I apologize. Anyways, you can see us either in Paris or in South Central. Take your pick. We will have free swag that includes buttons, bags, or totes, and also stickers. So come on over, hang out, say hi, and take a picture with us and post it on your social media so we know we have fans.
Yay. So Sarah was right. It is free, and it's from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Oh, you know what you got? You got May 13th. Because yes, it actually, this is the interesting thing about this convention. It is a small local convention in Paris, and they just had one in May, and it was so successful and the community reacted so positively that they decided to do one again in October. Yes. So that particular one happened at the Val Verde Unified School District in Paris. So I'm assuming that's where it's going to be again, but we will put updated information the closer it gets to that day.
Yes, and I also just researched information for Kale, and that's going to be at the Bridge Theater at a place called Home. It's 2830 South Central Avenue, Los Angeles, California, 90011. And I love this location because all I have to do is get on Central, which is right off where I live, and just go straight up north, and I arrive there. It's free comic books, free books, meet artists and writers, workshops, raffles, and more. So come on over. It's free. Check it out. All right, guys, we have been your hosts. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you. We appreciate when you come over to our events and hang out and say hello to us and talk to us. We love to hear from you. It's been really special. I've just had such a great con year so far, so I look forward to the rest of this year and next year. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.